Greetings to each of you in Jesus' worthy name this morning. Praise the Lord that God is still on the throne. Is that a reality to you this morning? It is a reality that God is still on the throne. We can't do anything about that, and we certainly don't want to change that, I'm sure, I trust. But we sang about a number of different ways that we might be tested to really, really believe that in our lives. We say we do, and I know that we would never say that we don't. But a number of different ways. Have the ones that once walked on the highway gone back and you feel all alone? We are very, very blessed, the body of believers. We aren't walking alone, but sometimes it might feel that way. Sometimes God seems silent, and we wonder what happens. We meet with grief. Others seem to be prospering, and we're not. God is still on the throne, and I am very, very thankful for that this morning. God is still on the throne, and he's willing to work with us, even when we set out to preach a sermon that not capable of doing. I'm struggling with that this morning. I did not take the message this morning from a Sunday school lesson. In fact, it started long before that. It started, the inspiration for this sermon, say it that way, came about, I don't remember exactly, but somewhere around 8 years ago. But I didn't know that it was an inspiration for a sermon at the time. In fact, I was assigned a topic somewhere around 8 years ago by the Sunday evening committee, The Power of Patience. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it, and I even asked Brother Claus, I don't know if you remember that or not, you were on the Sunday evening committee at that time, I said, what did you have in mind for this topic? And either Sunday evening church got canceled that evening, or I think there might have been a visiting minister, I'm not sure, I don't remember, but anyway, topic never happened, but I had started to study for it, and I was impressed with the need of growing in patience in my life. And so I decided to share that this morning. It stuck with me throughout the years. A number of times it came back to be a challenge to me. So the Sunday evening committee assigned a topic of patience. And after 8 years, you're going to get it now. you've had to wait a few years. And I'm going to trust that God will direct us as we look at that at this topic this morning. I feel a very great need of his direction, because I don't feel like I can stand here and am worthy of preaching to you about patience, because I feel a real need of it in my own life. If I asked you to describe patience this morning, it would be interesting to know what all you would have to say. I know that patience is the word itself, the concept is not something that's hard to get a hold of. But I do want to give you the dictionary definition of patience, because I want to come back to this time or two throughout the message, just so we can kind of wrap our minds around and get a hold of this morning. The first one, well, patience is simply defined as the quality of being patient. Okay, that's all you'll find. But patient, then, of course, is defined as able to remain calm and not become annoyed when waiting for a long time or when dealing with problems or difficult people. Wow, that was a mouthful. Let me read that again. Able to remain calm and not become annoyed. Two things there. Be calm and don't become annoyed when you're waiting for a long time or when you're dealing with problems or difficult people. Wow. Now, there's another definition that follows that. Done in a careful way over a long period of time without hurrying. Okay? We exercise patience when over a long period of time we keep doing things, and oftentimes it's when we don't see results, when it might even seem hopeless, but over a long period of time we keep doing things in a careful way without hurrying. Some people are perhaps naturally more patient than others. None of us are born with the natural ability to be patient all the time. Maybe it's just a difference. Maybe people aren't more patient than others. I'm not sure. Maybe it's just a different thing that that tests their patience than what tests mine. I don't know. I admire people that are willing to stand there and do the same thing day after day after day and never at least let on any sign of being disturbed about it. Or that seem to be able to put up with just about any person and work with them patiently. You look at, but even going back and looking at small children, it does seem like some of them are able to remain calm. Nothing riles them up as easily as another person. So I think that maybe while there is the natural tendency of some people to be more patient or impatient than others, we all would admit that we struggle with this, I know. Now, patience is used, most of the times when it's used in the Bible, it's in a little bit different context than what we use the word patience today. Although the same thought applies here, patience, by Strong's definition, is steadfastness, constancy, or endurance, being able to endure. And we talked about this in the Sunday school lesson this morning. Patience is often, it can also be translated and is a number of times in the New Testament as long-suffering. Okay, maybe when long-suffering is used, it's more what we think of as patience, maybe. But they go hand in hand. You are not going to be steadfast, constant, and endure without being a patient person, without having learned to be patient and not become annoyed and not become losing your cool. We say today a lot of times to become annoyed and become frustrated, obviously you will not be steadfast. There is some difference there in the way we often use the word today and the way it's used in Scripture. Now, I don't need to tell you that we live in an age when patience has almost become lost. Right around the time when, I don't remember if it was before or after, that I knew that I didn't have to give the topic on patience, but somewhere around that time, I stopped in, actually our family did, I think it was just my wife and I at that time, but it doesn't matter, stopped in at a fast food restaurant. It was a KFC. I can still picture the place. And there was an elderly man there, and he was literally taking his fist and beating on the counter and hollering when we walked in. And I thought maybe he knew these people. Maybe he was putting this on. Didn't take long to realize the whole atmosphere was tense. This man was frustrated. He had become annoyed because, well, for the very simple reason that the chicken he ordered wasn't ready and that all this other is sitting there. Nobody's ordering that kind. You should have known better. You shouldn't have prepared that. You should have had what I wanted. I don't know how long he stood there, but it wasn't but a couple of minutes, I'm sure. Just a few minutes. Now, I had to wonder if that man couldn't remember, but he was older. If he couldn't remember back to the days when there wasn't a McDonald's and a KFC on every corner. And he couldn't have expected service like that. Okay? But because he had become accustomed to it and he thought that he deserved it and that they owed it to him, and he was very annoyed when it didn't happen the way he thought. I'm pretty sure, I trust, and I'm sure that I won't ever walk in and find you carrying on that way. I trust you, better of you, but what would happen when you got back out to your vehicle and you had waited a lot longer than what you thought? It's ridiculous. I thought we could get out of here, and here we spent half a day in there waiting on our food. We act that way sometimes. We act that way. I'm not sure quite what feeds what. If it's the impatience of our society that causes people to put up signs like if you don't receive your order in 60 seconds or whatever, it's free, or however many seconds it is, 90. Or if it's the reverse, that because we cater to people's impatience, it becomes even worse. I'm not sure, but it goes hand in hand. It feeds each other. That the more we focus on quick service and meeting people's needs, the internet has done a lot for this. We find answers. I find this. And a lot of times, talking to someone on the phone and they're typing furiously to find the answer quickly on the internet, whereas before it would have been, I'll call you back tomorrow, the next day, or whatever. Or maybe call you back in 5 minutes. I can have an answer. I can send an email. Or I can order something that's in Japan right now and have it in a matter of a few days, or that's in California, and I'll have it tomorrow afternoon. We don't like to wait. We're not used to waiting anymore. And when we have to, We think that it has an awful infringements on our rights, and we get used to that. Now, I would like to look at some Bible examples of people that were very patient and try to make application today. Most of them come from the Old Testament. And then in the end, if we have time, I hope to have time to look at what the New Testament teaches about being patient. You will find that the word patience doesn't come up at all in the Old Testament. Patient does once or a few times. The idea does, patiently does a few times. Anyway, just an interesting thought. But patience is a number of times in the New Testament. It's often the little things I find in my life, and I hope that you can identify with this morning. I find in my life that it's often the little things that will test my patience, because I haven't prepared myself for them. If I break my leg and I go to the hospital and they tell me it's going to be 6 weeks before you go back to work, that would be a real trial of patience. It would be. But I would say, I would try to, or I trust it. Maybe I should say you would. You would try to say, especially if it wasn't something foolish that you had done, especially. Then that tests our patience maybe more so. But just going to have to be patient and look to God to take me through this. But when the vehicle in front of you doesn't move when the light turns green, and you lose 10 or 15 seconds, what comes out? Or somebody doesn't, I'm looking over here because I think this is more a problem. It is at our house anyway. Traffic lights and someone else's driving habits. They might not even cost you any time, but they sure work on your patience. Driving down the road, that car passed me 3 times now in the last 5 miles, and then they slow down. I have to get over, and it shouldn't bother us that bad, but it does. Customer service. We expect that when we walk in somewhere, there's going to be somebody there, and they're going to focus on our needs, and they're going to take care of us. It's good business, and it is good business. You'll find out that if a business will go backwards fast if they don't have good customer service. You know that because people aren't patient. They don't want to wait around 10 minutes or less, even than that, for someone to come and meet their needs. I remember one time elderly person complained because someone didn't take care of them in the office when she came in. She stood there for she might have said 10, and no one helped her. Well, what was going on? Well, there was someone else here, and the man was on the phone talking to someone, and well, if it had been you that called in, you would have wanted someone to spend time with you on the phone, right? And walk you through your issue. Anyway, but she lost patience. She left. And so we have businesses that are very oriented to taking care of your needs now, okay? We promise that someone will be at your house within an hour. Depends what the service is, right? Don't want to wait. We also have people that are very, very impatient when they want to acquire something. The idea of saving up to buy something is almost lost. We want to be able to get money. We want to get it now. I recently talked to someone that was managing a credit union, and he said that whenever they get an app in for someone that wants a loan, they drop what they're doing and they need to have a response within 30 minutes. Because if you don't have an answer in 30 minutes, you probably lost that customer. They want to know. They want what they want, and they want it now, right? They don't want to wait around to buy a vehicle till this afternoon. If I can afford to buy this vehicle now, well, not afford, that we throw that word around, but if I can drive away with this vehicle now, I want it now. And we are not, all these issues, we're not as far from some of these things perhaps as we should be. It's the small things that often it's the small and unexpected that will often bring the greatest challenges, or at least that will test us because we're not expecting to be tested. All right, let's go and look at some examples of patience. Open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37. I did not realize when I prepared this sermon, Brother John Dale, that what the topic was this evening. And so I use Joseph as an example, and I'm going to do my very best to stay off of your topic. But if I do mention something that you want to mention this evening, please go ahead and mention it again this evening. It won't do us any harm. But I do want to be considerate here. But Joseph impresses me, yes, with forgiveness, but also with the patience that he showed. 37 verses 18 to 28, I don't think we're going to read these, partly because of the topic this evening. But Joseph here was tested in his patience by misunderstandings and by mistreatment. But by misunderstandings especially is what I want to think of here. People might misinterpret what you said sometimes. They might, and they will sometimes. Maybe you're walking out the hall after church, and you hear the thought that you gave in Sunday school being discussed, and that's not what you had in mind at all. You didn't even mean that. And here they are dragging it through the mud. At least that's what it appears like to you. And you, within you, something rises up, and you want to set this thing straight, and you want to set it now. Set it straight now before your reputation suffers any. I don't know what would have happened if Joseph would have acted in that way. He had these dreams, and he told them, I believe, well, God was working through him. He told these dreams, and looking at Joseph and his character, I'm sure that it was not because he wanted to gloat about it or put his brethren out. No, but he was misinterpreted. They took it as that. They felt smitten, and probably for other reasons too, that they felt bad. And they took it out on him, but they misunderstood what Joseph was saying here. The Bible doesn't tell us how Joseph dealt with all of this. It doesn't. All we have is the facts, but we can see by the facts that Joseph was a very, very patient individual. First of all, by the ones that were very close to him, if people that you barely know, in other words, if I meet someone on the street or in my work and they ask what we believe and I tell them and that's ridiculous because, and they have their, they misunderstand and misinterpret what we put into practice, I can deal with that. They're not extremely close to me, okay? And they don't have to appreciate me. But when it's the people at home, when it's the people that I work with 5 days a week or go to church with, then oftentimes we seek more to be understood than we do to understand. And we grow very impatient when people don't understand us. We can. The temptation is there. I shouldn't say we do. We do. Sometimes we do. The situation didn't get better anytime soon. Turn over to Genesis 39 and 40. I don't think we're going to read most of this, but so Joseph was patient with his brothers. We know that for years, actually. Even throughout all his life, because after his father died, you remember his brothers came and asked again for forgiveness, and Joseph was sorry about that. He was grieved by that because he realized that they did not perceive that he had truly forgiven them. All right, now we get to 39 and 40. He was sold into Egypt. You know the story well, I trust. And he had this awful experience here with Potiphar's wife. Potiphar was the calling the captain of the guard, I believe. Anyway, with Potiphar's wife, he was high up, and Joseph would not. Joseph was a very integral man here. He wouldn't bow to these temptations, and he fled from out the house, and he did what was right, and so he should have been rewarded for doing what was right. Right? He was, but not at this point. Not in the way that he surely thought that he should have been rewarded. He was thrown into jail. He was cast into prison. Now, if that wouldn't test your patience, I would think that you would be above temptation in this area, perhaps to stand up for what's right, do what's right, and then to be lied about and be thrown into prison where you couldn't do anything about it. Now, we said that it's often the small things in life that really, really test us. None of you that I am aware of, none of you have been tested like this. in this exact way for sure. But we are starting to face more and more people that will. Let me back up. I wanted to say something about Joseph. Think how he felt through all of this. He had stood up for what was right. He was the moral one. Until it was all said and done, when this wicked woman had finished her story, he was the one that was immoral, and she was the one that had done what was right, right? And was believed, I guess. I don't know if Potiphar really believed the story or not, but he was the one that suffered. We're starting to face that today well, it is in small ways, and I wonder how well we do with this test. We stand up for what's right. Think with me just a minute in the area of same-sex marriages. You see how the world can turn that around and turn that into a hate crime and the people that are so unloving and unforgiving? How do we respond to all of that? Can we bear it patiently? Can we let others misinterpret what we preach and teach, not just preach and believe and live out, and actually lie about us and tell stories that aren't true about Christians and say, and can we take that? Or do we just wish we had a chance to stand up and make the front page of the newspaper or TV or whatever and really set those people straight? It's what wells up within us if we just let it go. That's what we want to do, lash back. What did Jesus say about all that? He said, "Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake." I think I have that right. Anyway, blessed, you're going to be happy with it. You can be blessed by that. Are you finding a blessing in it this morning? That's a tough question I had to ask myself when I was studying this. Am I finding a blessing for people lying about us as a Christian church? Saying obnoxious things about us? Sure, it hurts. Sure, we wish that they would turn to God. Sure, we do. But what about what it does to us? Hopefully, we will let that make us stronger and not fight back. Now, that's a small thing. So far, it has been a very small thing. It's possible that one day, it's actually very, very possible, and walk with me through this for just a minute, that we'll find ourselves in a courthouse, okay? Well, I'm not trying to walk down a trail and surmise things and be afraid of things and be blasted with all kinds of things that are twisted and aren't true. Is it going to be easy to stand in? Is it going to be easier to stand up to that than it is to what the media is saying today? Well, no, it's not. If we can't make it in this test, how are we going to make it when we're tested like Joseph was? The answer is we probably won't. Let's take that one to heart. Let's be patient. Let's be patient and just allow God. Realize that it's in God's hands. Joseph had to understand that it was God's hands. That's the only way he could be patient. Now, he wasn't done with Joseph yet. We could spend all morning on Joseph. We could, but I want to pull out one more test. This is not necessarily a certain area that we're tested in, but a way that God tests us here, more so. Joseph is in prison here in chapter 40. And there's nothing he can do. At least it doesn't look like it. There is absolutely nothing he can do. We know he was bearing it patiently because if he would have lashed back, if he would have become annoyed and perturbed, he would have never been, all we have is the facts here, but he would have never been set at liberty to minister among the prisoners. We understand that, okay? But we know he took it patiently. He must have, or he would have never had this reputation. But there was no way for him to, I don't think there was any way, to call a lawyer and appeal to the outside. He was stuck there unless something would change. Someone high in authority, change your minds. And he finally had a chance. He finally saw all this was going to work out, he thought. And the butler didn't interpret his dream, but God interpreted it through him. And he says in verse 14, after he had interpreted this dream, God did, he says, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon." I've been innocent. I've suffered. Please remember me when you get back to Pharaoh. And finally Joseph had a glimmer of hope. Finally God was working and he would be set free, right? Imagine with me how Joseph must have felt. Just think, put yourself there. The butler, sure enough, came to pass. The butler and the baker. We're freed. Joseph went to bed that night. I wonder if he had a chance to talk to Pharaoh yet. I wonder. Maybe not. But he's praying, Lord, please, work in Pharaoh's heart. I know you can. And I know that you will if it's your will, right? I'm surmising things here, supposing things. But he's praying, God, please, work in Pharaoh's heart. When the butler talks to him, soften his heart. Help him to see. I'm saying Pharaoh. Pharaoh, that's right. Pharaoh's heart. And soften his heart. Next day, he continues to pray. Third day, nothing happened yet, but good things take time, right? Maybe he hasn't. Fourth day, imagine how he felt about the fifth, the sixth, the seventh day. I don't believe Joseph had any word. Well, he didn't, because the butler forgot. Now, Joseph didn't know that the butler forgot, probably, but he forgot. And we are tested in ways when we see what we think is God's way of working out things, okay? And we become all excited, and then everything goes dry sometimes. At least it looks like it does, right? Things are just working out, and we see what's coming, and we're praising the Lord for it, and suddenly it's gone. And our patience is tested. We think it can't be sometimes. It wasn't a week, it wasn't 2 weeks, it wasn't 3 weeks. Well, it was, but on and on. And finally, I'm sure that hope died out that God was going to use that way to work. I'm sure it did. I don't know if it took God a couple years. I don't know if it did to bring Joseph to the place where he left it completely in God's hands. I know it is that way so many times in our lives when we finally leave it completely, absolutely in God's hands. I'll spend the rest of my life in jail. That God pulled him out. I don't know. I don't know if it took him that long or not, or if God had other reasons. Joseph was ministering to others there in prison. And this can come in different ways in our lives, so many different ways. You'll have to make your own applications. I think of the time when I had a house I was trying to get rid of, and it would have really been nice to be rid of it, and I had other financial obligations. And sure enough, when I thought time was just about up to have got this in order, that I'm going to have to do something different, there was a contract on the house. God was working. It was going to be just in time, and a few weeks later, it fell flat. And it tests your patience. Oh, I thought now what? Okay, and we become annoyed because we're waiting too long. We thought we knew, and now it's not working out. Joseph went right on serving God in prison here, and we need to trust the same way. And probably one of the hardest things for Joseph in this experience is that he couldn't count days down. He didn't know that he was going to be. When he was going to be released, or if he was going to be released, he didn't have a countdown. He had nothing to look forward to. It looked mighty gloomy for Joseph. And most of the times, the picture isn't that dark for us, but it can sure seem like it. sometimes when we see God working, we trust that He's going to work it out this way, and then that way's gone, and there's no hope left, or that we can see. All right. The next example that I have is not Joseph, and it's probably where your mind goes when you think of patience, because he's often held up, and it is the epitome of example that we have of patience, and that's Job. And I would like to we obviously can't read the whole book of Job this morning, but let's read, or maybe it would give us opportunity to put this sermon into practice right away. We won't do that. I want to look at one verse here in Job, and that's in chapter 23, verse 10. Job said something here that's often quoted. And I know we're just pulling this out of the middle, but he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And that is a noble testimony to have. The Lord knows the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And that should be our testimony. It should. There's nothing wrong with that. But so many times, at least when I read this verse, we tend to focus on the coming forth as gold and not the trials that we're gonna face. And we want to be like Job. We think of, oh, if we could just be like Job and the way he suffered and just looked to God and how God raised him back up again. And if we would lose everything that we had, we hope we could be like Job. If we lost all our cattle and he lost his children and the houses, but what about when two cows die? Or one? And we're not going to make a profit this year, or it dries up and it doesn't rain and we had to feed more hay than we ever thought we were going to have to and took the profit right out of it for this time. Or there was a car accident or a doctor bill and it's not anywhere as close to what Job had yet, and we start fretting and getting tense about it. And it's the little things that are going to trip us up, and if we can't face it there, I don't know why we would say that we'll be able to take it if we face trials like Job. Maybe it's not that. Maybe your applications are different. Maybe someone broke in and stole your tools on a job. I don't know. And that can really test our patience, because someone did something against us and it frustrates us. People think they can help themselves to what belongs to me. It doesn't really belong to us, but we say it does. And test our patience. I mentioned doctor bills or accidents. These things especially test our patience. Financial things test our patience when we don't have anything to show for it. I find that's when it really tests me the most. When I write out a check for $750 or whatever to the doctor. Well, maybe we have good health to show for it. Maybe we should look at it a little differently, or somewhere else, or to replace something that someone stole. And you're no farther ahead than you were before. And it can really, really test. We can become very annoyed. Sure, it's good to have the testimony that Job did. After God tries me, I'm going to come forth as gold. But are we living it out that way? I never had boils. I've had other things that tested, health issues that tested my patience. But I have heard some people complain when they had two or three at a time, how miserable they were. And I'm sure they were. And I'm not pointing fingers at anyone else. Are we going to make it? Are we going to be able to stand like Job? Job didn't know either that God was going to raise him up and bless him again in financial ways. He didn't know whether he was going to die through this experience or not. In fact, I have a feeling he thought he would, at least at times. But God did raise him up and out of his bed of affliction and blessed him again. But it was only because Job had responded in a very, very patient way, in a very godly way. Had he become annoyed and impatient, the devil would have had exactly what he was trying to prove. And I don't know how the story of Job would read. I really don't. I don't know if it would be recorded for us or not. All right, another example. We're going to have to hurry up here. Is in Exodus 32. And I want to turn here again. Should read this example. Probably won't read nearly all of it. This is the account of Moses, and I'm not sure what I said, if I said Genesis or Exodus. Exodus is what I meant to say, Exodus 32. And Moses was up on the mountain, and the people, you think of the paradox here. They couldn't wait a few days while Moses was gone. And they had turned to they turned to other gods. That's not what I wanted to focus on. They got tired of Moses delaying, and they made this golden calf. But Moses, when he came back down from the mountain, let's read in verses 31 through 35. And this is jumping in again. I trust that you know this story. He said, Moses returned unto the Lord and said, "Oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Whosoever hath sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Therefore now go, lead the people into the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I will visit their sin upon them." And the Lord plagued the people because they had made the calf, because of the calf which Aaron made. And then just flip over with me to Numbers 14. And verse 11. And the Lord said unto Moses, "How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it will it be ere they believe me, for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and a mightier than they. And Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up thy people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by day, time in a pillar of a cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, and the nations have heard the fame of thee, will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he hath slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying, and then he went on saying about the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy. And here Moses was tried in ways that would have been very, very tough. The people under him had rebelled, and it would have been easy for Moses to take that very personal. And when God said, I'm going to destroy them and I'll make of you a greater nation, Moses would have said, great, let's go. But he didn't. He said, no. And he pled and he interceded for them. How many times we get this switched around, whether you're a leader, wherever it is, anywhere there's someone under you that you are responsible for, and they disobey or they rebel, and you say, God, why don't you just punish them and get it over with? And we wish punishment upon them. Maybe not that the Lord would destroy them physically, maybe not kill them, but we wish punishment upon them. And Moses was exactly the opposite here, and he said, in my own words, think about it. And going back in the earlier one, when they had made the golden calf, they had disobeyed, and it must have been a terrible disappointment and embarrassment to Moses. But no, he pled with them to the point where he said, if you're not going to work with these people, blot my name out of the book that you have written. That's commitment. That's commitment. And that's patience. Now, there was a time, we said that we often fall when we're not expecting it. And I don't think we'll turn there because I have one more here that I for sure want to get to. But God gave Moses a specific command in Numbers 20. And he said, go and speak to the rock and water will come out of it. And this time Moses did not respond in the right way. He went to the rock and he said, hear now, ye rebels. And he said, must we fetch water out of this rock? And I don't want to draw something out there that's not, but did he think that he was now also a provider for the children of Israel instead of God fetching water out of the rock? Whatever, and he took his rock and he smote it and nothing happened. And so I can just imagine this, smote it harder yet. And sure enough, water came out. But God saw what happened, and he was displeased. So many times, I don't know what the problem was here exactly, but I have a feeling that Moses, when God came to Moses and told him what to do, Moses might have heard what God said. He probably did, but he already thought he knew what God wanted, okay? He had done this before. He had smitten a rock before, right? And when God told him and came and told him what to do, he said, yeah, I know what we're doing. And he went up and he said, do we have to fetch water out of this rock again? And he hit it and nothing happened, and he hits it harder. I don't know. I don't know all that was behind it. Maybe it was his frustration that was just boiling up within him. And speaking to the rock, maybe there was nothing nice to say at the time. Maybe there wasn't. I don't know. Maybe he didn't feel in the mood to speak right then, and so he smote. I don't know what the idea was there, but I know that it was his impatience. And then, of course, he was punished for that. Maybe he lost patience because it didn't make sense that he needed to speak to at this time when hitting it worked just fine. I don't know. Naaman lost patience when he was told what to do, and it didn't make any sense for him to go dip in the muddy water, and it didn't have anything to do with being healed of leprosy. And I don't know what would have happened to him, but he wouldn't have been cured of his leprosy if he would have followed his own way there. But he had someone to stop him and make him think. All right, one more example yet. Let's go to Mark 10. Mark 10, chapter 13. Jesus here was teaching. He was doing He was actually speaking to the Pharisees here. He was teaching them important things. He was teaching them in this instance about divorce and remarriage. And verse 13 says, "And they brought young children to him that he should touch him. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was much displeased and said unto them, 'Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein.'" You must receive the kingdom of God as a little child. Here we have something that the disciples didn't understand. And that was that these children, that Jesus would have time for these children. Jesus was doing important things here. He was teaching. He was teaching people that were much more important than these small children, right? No, not in Jesus' eyes. Not in Jesus' way of thinking. Although he was very busy, he took these children unto him and he blessed them. He had time for them. I don't know what children were like in this day, 2,000 years ago. But I can just imagine that some of these children had mud on their sandals or feet. Some of them probably had gum in their, well, probably not gum, but they might have had, in today's terms, gum in their hair, chocolate on their face. Maybe some of the little boys had frogs in their pockets. I don't know. It wasn't some little group of special children that Jesus called unto him. It was common, ordinary, everyday children. And Jesus stopped what he was doing and took time to spend with them and bless them. Parents that are in the stage of life that I am, how many times have you recently taken time from what seemed to be so important and take time for your children? Maybe you're fixing your pickup truck or your lawnmower or whatever, and you reach for the screwdrivers where it ought to be, and there's none there, and you know you had five of them there. And you call your children, Johnny was out fixing his bike yesterday with them. Well, Johnny, where are my screwdrivers? When I knew where they were behind the shop, and there's none there. Able to remain calm and not become annoyed. I need this when waiting a long time or when dealing with difficult situations. Maybe you're in the middle of studying. God spoke to me in preparing this sermon. And you hear some shouting and thumping and bumping, and you go to see what it is, and two of your children have hold of the same toy, each pulling on it. I had it first. No, I had it, but I left it for a minute, and then he took it, but I was still playing with it. You think they ought to be beyond this, right? They should be. I spanked you yesterday for this, maybe. I don't know what's going through your mind. And you become annoyed because you have more important things to be doing than settling squabbles. Maybe you're almost, you almost have the baby to sleep. You're rocking and you almost have the baby to sleep. And there's a crash from the kitchen and you wonder what that might have been. And a whale maybe. Brother tells on sister that she was trying to get sugar and dumped the bowl and it's broken and there's sugar all over the floor now. These are everyday, they happen, they do. And we lash out, or we tend to. There's something here that the disciples didn't understand. And I fear that we fail to understand many times. They, in a very literal way, were trying to hinder the children from coming to Jesus. And I wondered when I thought over this, what have I done? What have I done in the last week or two that might have hindered my child from coming to Jesus? My children don't see everything I have to get done today, that the truck does need to be fixed before we can go anywhere, or that a sermon does need to be ready by Sunday. What they might see is Dad doesn't have time for me. Have I in any way hindered my child from coming to Jesus, or have I helped him find Jesus? Jesus said, if you don't enter like a little child, you won't come into the kingdom of heaven. And maybe it would be do us good to think about what that means. No, it doesn't mean the fighting over toys and all those kind of things. We understand that. But what does he mean? Think about that. We need to be careful about society's view on our children. Can affect us. Children are a blessing from God. And I've heard many of you that have raised families tell you, you know, before long those days are going to be gone. You're not going to have them anymore. Enjoy it now. And that looks like a long way off sometimes. It really does. It hardly even seems like reality. But I know that it is. We have today. What do our children see in us? Do they see that we have time? Do they see that they are important to us? Yeah, there's a time. There's a time to tell them, listen, I have this that I need to do right now. It must be done. There's that time. Patience here with our children is not just letting things go unchecked. Not at all. Not at all. To see a wrong that your child does and say, well, I'm going to be patient. I'm not going to punish them for this time. That's not what we're talking about. Not at all, but to deal with them in patience. If we become frustrated and angry, what can we expect out of them? What can we? Let's make sure we have Jesus' view of the children here rather than the disciples' view. I'm also blessed by Noah. If I understand the time right, his children were probably not even born yet when he received, or they wouldn't have been when he received a command to build the ark. And I don't know what all kept Noah going, but I think that one of them probably was a vision for his children. And let's make that ours today. I don't think we're going to take time. We're not going to take time for the last part of the message. Maybe I'll just close with one of the thoughts that I had. And that was that patience is not listed in Galatians 5 in the fruit of the Spirit. Long-suffering is very, very close. If you find yourself struggling with impatient responses in any of these areas, whether it's to your children or whether it's you're an authority over someone else or whether it's financial losses or whatever it is, you can work on those things. You can endeavor to be more patient, but we have to understand that patience comes from God's Spirit dwelling within us. It is the fruit of the Spirit. And if His Spirit is dwelling in us, we will be long-suffering people. We will be patient people. Perhaps we focus sometimes too much, at least for myself, on I need to grow in this area. I need to be more patient. I need to be long-suffering. And maybe it would do me good just to realize that I need more Spirit in my life, more Spirit control. I need God to work through me with His Spirit more than what He has been. With these thoughts in mind, let's kneel for prayer.